Blog Talk Radio.
Lisa Tarvis with Just Believe Radio. It's our first radio session today. I'm very excited. I have lots of hopefully really great things coming up for everybody to talk about. And hopefully we'll get some, maybe even some people to call in. Anybody has any kind of questions or anything they want to ask or talk about, you can call in at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. So, anyway, I want to introduce the creator of our Rightstream radio station and the person giving me the opportunity to host this show, which is going to be a spiritual, metaphysical. We're going to cover lots of different areas. Her name is Daria, and she actually has her own show on this station as well. And she's going to tell us about that. And Daria, are you there?
I am here, Lisa. How are you?
Oh, good, good, good. How are you?
Good. And thank you so much. I just want to say that I'm so excited that you agreed to join the network, and I'm just thrilled to have Just Believe with Lisa Tarvis on Sundays. And it's just a real pleasure. So thank you for agreeing to host a show for me, for this network, network.
I'm really excited. I think it's going to be great. I love doing radio. I have done lots of radio in the past as a guest, and I've wanted to host my own show for a while, and it's just a matter of, you know, just having the right opportunity come at me, and of course this was perfect because I've known you for a while, and you have I love what you do. Daria is an author and excellent with, you know, the radio shows and her blogging. I have a lot to learn about blogging from her. So we're, okay. You know, there's a lot to learn. I'm actually in the middle of your book right now. The one I read, the one that I've been reading lately, I think it's actually the only one you may have sent me.
I'm still working on the sequel, so it's the only one I've written so far.
That would be the one then. we need to talk about that too, because I'm probably about a quarter of the way through it. I just finally started it the other day, and then I was reading. I couldn't stop reading it, which is obviously a great way to have a compliment about your book when it's something that, you know, you're having a hard time putting down. But it's also so local. You know, the book's called Water Signs. Water Signs, and it's something being from the Philadelphia area. You know, it's based locally, so it's kind of interesting when you're reading it and you have all these, like, oh, Wayne, Pennsylvania, and all these different things. I'm like, well, I know that place. It's kind of weird reading a book when it's like your neighborhood practically. So anyway,
yeah,
it really takes place at the Jersey Shore, I guess, mostly. And but I'm enjoying it so far, so I can't wait to read more about it. And you're working on a sequel?
Yes, I'm working on a sequel called Sea to Shining Sea, kind of staying with that water motif,
right,
bringing back, you know, the two main characters. And I don't want to give too much away of the story since you're only a quarter of the way through. But, yeah, they will return in the sequel. So, and they'll be facing some newer obstacles the second time around. And, you know, it's funny, Lisa, just the reason my whole book came about was because of a psychic. This was before I met you, but in early 2008, there's a woman here in South Florida where I live now who I discovered through a friend, and you and I were talking earlier about word of mouth kind of being probably the
right
best way find a good reader. Well, she I heard about this woman through a friend of mine that was a coworker at the time, and she said, oh, my God, you got to go see this woman. She's awesome, and her name is Anne. And so I liked her from the moment I met her. But anyway, we sat down. It was January 2008, and now I had been going to her at least once a year for about the previous 10 years, and all of a sudden she said to me, who is, and she used a man's proper name, which also happens to be the name of my brother-in-law. So I said, oh, you mean my brother-in-law? And she goes, no, this is somebody you knew years ago, and he loved you, and you loved him. And she starts describing the whole scenario. And it finally occurred to me that she was using his proper name, and I used to call him by his – everybody called him by his nickname, which was a shortened version of that name. I don't really want to use the name itself. But
right.
But what happened was that sort of opened up this floodgate of memories, because I had sort of forced myself to have amnesia about this guy for, like, 14 years. Yeah. And then all these memories all of a sudden, because I sat down with this woman who, I guess the time was right for her to finally pick up on this, because, like I said, I had been seeing her for, like, 10 years, and it was the first time his name ever came up. And it was, like, literally, the mind is a powerful thing. I mean, I had forced myself, because it was so painful, and you'll read it, the book is based on a lot of this. It was so painful that it was the only thing I could do for my own survival, was to literally make myself forget that he actually existed. And so for her to pull this out of my subconscious brought back this flood of memories that I didn't know what to do with. And long story short, I finished my book in – that was January. My book was done in June. I sat down to write it in March because I just didn't know what else to do. And I really feel like it was, in a way, divinely inspired. And I wrote it in 4 months. So,
That's amazing. When you're writing it, are you creating it as you're going, or do you have, like, the whole plan in your head before you start, like, you sit down to start writing?
Well, I think for water signs, I really believe that was sort of like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Not that I won't write other books, I certainly will, but I mean, in terms of the process for that book, literally, I never even had to think about an outline. It's just like, I couldn't wait to get home from work and just write. And the words, I couldn't type fast enough to keep up with the words. And it's somehow I instinctively knew when to end one chapter, when to start a new one, how many chapters. That's why I say I feel like it was inspired from above, because I really didn't have to think about anything. Now, I did pull out a lot of my journals, because I've been a journal keeper for decades. And so I pulled out a lot of my journals to kind of help me fine-tune, like, some details and to really remember certain details about what happened. Because I was remembering things, but I didn't want to just trust my memory. So I went back into my journals, and that really helped me flesh out a lot of the plot points and things that happen in the book, even down to that little red devil robe that Ken, the main character, the hero of the story, gives to Maddie's friend at the nightclub. I mean, I didn't even remember that rose until I actually opened up my journal and was like, oh, my God, yeah, I remember this night, you know. So I would say that for me, for water signs, I think the process by which I wrote that probably won't be repeated, because with my sequel now, because the sequel is actually more – I mean, my book, water signs is fictional, but it's based on facts. So I was able to, like, embellish things, change things, tweak things from – but they all stem from real life, whereas with the sequel, I'm having to make up the story. So the process is a lot different.
I would think so. With my book, I know when I sat down, I mean, I had an idea. I had, like, a theme. I had a I knew I wanted to express myself. I wanted to kind of get the stereotype of, you know, what I do for a living. I wanted that to kind of go, like, I just wanted to explain that you can be a real person and still have some, you know, some gifts that seem a little crazy. So I had an idea, but until I actually sat down and started typing, I really didn't know what I was going to say. I really didn't. I put it into chapters, and then, you know, I tried to, like, have an outline with the chapters, and then I ended up switching stuff around, and then all of a sudden something would come to me. Oh, I need this. This needs to be a main point in my book, you know. So it was like I did it fast too. Mine was like 3 or 4 months as well that it took me to write it. So
wow. So now, Lisa, did you go in chronological order, like, with your book? Because now yours is I'm like straight nonfiction, basically, right? You're talking about your life. And your experiences.
Yeah, I am. It's completely nonfiction, and, you know, and I like the idea. I've even thought about fiction. I like the idea of, like, making a story, like, writing a book, making a story that has a lot to do with your life, but making it fictional? Because I think you have, like, I had to be very careful, and I've had some criticism about, like, you know, the fact that you, you don't talk enough about your personal experience, you know, your personal experiences. Like, well, I can't talk about stuff that happened with my ex-husband and put it in a book, you know, and the things that I want to say that I did have some spiritual experiences during, because if you do that, then you're risking, you know, a lawsuit. So it's, you know, you have to be very careful when you're writing a nonfiction versus a fictional book. I could tell a story, you know, like crazy based on fiction that, you know, I take off of my real life, but it's a little different. It's definitely a different experience. But I liked writing nonfiction. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think it would be a lot of fun to write a fiction book too. You know, it would be interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. I just love writing. And, you know, have from a very early age. But I want to ask you, how old were you when you first started seeing angels? Like, what's your first memory of that? And how did it begin?
I don't ever remember not seeing them. It was kind of a thing where they were just always part of my life. And, it was a situation where, they were just like my friends, and I mean, I don't have any idea how old I was. It was like they were just always there, and I would imagine it was probably even as a baby. I really don't know, but they were always there, and I was never afraid of them. Never thought it was strange. I would see lights. I would see full body angels showing wings, the whole thing, and I thought everybody could see them. I had no reason to think that it was anything that was special for me. And as they, you know, they talked to me, they played with me. We, you know, I read to them, you know, it was just like one of those things. And when I was scared, like if I got scared at night, they'd always, you know, come in and you know, just be with me, because I was always afraid of the dark, you know, typical little kid things, you know, and I would sit there and I'd, you know, feel them come into the room, and I'd look and I'd be able to see them. At nighttime, a lot of times it was just I would see lights. I wouldn't see like the full body kind of thing. But, but that went away. I mean, at some point, I would say when I was probably, you know, maybe 8 or 9, I couldn't see them anymore. But I still knew they were there. I still felt them. I would see lights and things. I would still see glitter. It's hard to explain how they showed themselves, but I didn't see their full bodies anymore. And that was sad, but, you know, it's the way it works sometimes. I think we get a little jaded as we get older and, you know, people start telling us we're crazy if we're seeing things like that. Yeah. So.
Now, did you ever talk about this with your family or your siblings or anyone that you were seeing angels or?
Not really. I mean, I think it was kind of something that I shared a little bit with my mom and dad, not really with anybody else. And they were very supportive. They didn't ever, make a big deal out of it. Like I said, in the beginning, I thought everybody could see them, so it wasn't anything really odd. By the time I could really express myself and things, I would imagine they probably thought I just had like an imaginary friend or something. You know, and I did call them my friends. I didn't really know they were angels at the time. You know, it was kind of a strange thing, because you don't really know what's going on when you don't understand that what you're seeing is not something that everybody else can see. I mean, I thought everybody could see it. I thought everybody knew what was going on, so had the same experiences. So it was kind of, you know, like that for me. But I think that probably happens with a lot of people with gifts, though. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of people with gifts think that, you know, especially something that they're born with, you know, when they can see something like that, they just think everybody can. My dad has told me that he can see, and he's always had the ability to see auras very clearly. And even he was like 30s, 40s, probably, before he realized that everybody couldn't see them. You know, he just thought everybody could sense.
Interesting.
Yeah, he just thought everyone saw the same thing around him. And, you know, it was just not something you talked about a lot, you know. Now it's like everybody talks about it. It's okay, you know, it's more accepted. But, you know, several years ago it wasn't such a big topic, and people thought you were crazy if you started thinking that. And he didn't have a name for it. He didn't understand what it was that he was seeing. He didn't know it was an aura. You know, he used it. He tells me all the time it worked great for him because he was a salesman. So he could go into a business and be like, not wasting my time, and walk out as soon as you saw the people, you know. He would
That's
know
awesome.
That it wasn't. Yeah. So he used it for good reasons personally. But it worked for him that way. So that was good. But, you know, so I guess everybody has their own thing, and it takes a while to figure out what's going on, and it takes a while to figure out whether or not you're, you know, you're normal or not. Whatever.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, to have a practical application. And so speaking of that, of applying these gifts, now you talk in your book about how when you were little, you had this desire to, like, help people who were sick and to be around them. I mean, how did that work out in real life? I mean, and were you able to heal people through this gift, through the angels?
It was a situation where I just liked being around. I thought it was just kind of a compassionate thing. I felt bad for somebody who wasn't sick. But I felt like I needed to have my hands on them. Like I needed to be touching them. And I don't know if it was out of fear, like if I was afraid at the time that you know, something was going to happen to them if I wasn't there. I really don't know. I just know that I needed to be there. And I actually got sick a lot as a child, probably because I was always hanging around sick people. But I used to get sick as a kid a lot. And, I remember always, even then, you know, as I got older, I wanted to be alone. But, you know, when you're little, you want to be around your mom, your dad. You want to be with people that you care about when you're sick. And, but, you know, older people, a lot of times, they don't want anybody around them, you know, when they're not feeling well. And I was like a leech, you know, I had to be touching the person. So I don't know if I helped. I mean, I don't think anybody knew what I was doing. You know, I don't think anybody understood what I was doing. It was probably not until I was in my 30s that I was able to really understand that what I was doing was something that I was able to touch somebody and make pain go away. You know, and I think it actually started more based on when I started understanding, like, the concept of Reiki. When you start learning about the different healing modalities out there that give it some sort of direction. So I knew then, okay, if somebody's arm hurts, I'm going to put my hands on their arm, and I'm going to have the intention in my head, in my thoughts, my hands on their arm, and I'm going to make them better. You know, I'm going to take their pain away, and then it would happen, and it was crazy. So then I directed it. You know, that was before I ever did any kind of Reiki class. You know, that was before I ever was attuned to Reiki. So I knew that I had that gift, but then I decided to get the Reiki attunement to learn more. And I think that actually gave it a name that people understood. Now, you know, people don't understand somebody's ability to self-heal or to heal just from, you know, like being a natural born healer. But people do understand Reiki, you know, people understand, you know, different types of modalities like that, you know, give it some kind of a name, you know?
Yeah. Sure, but, like acupuncture and some of the alternative treatments that are out there.
Acupressure. I mean, you know, there are lots of different, you know, energy healing methods. And for me, because of the fact that I was just using my hands, Reiki made the most sense to pursue. And so I did Reiki 1, then I did Reiki 2 and Master over years, you know, and it gave it some sort of direction and made me understand a little better, I think, what I was doing, you know, what I was able to do. And why?
Now, Lisa,
and why?
Did you And why, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but did you know, like, at what point, like, when did you decide, okay, this is what I'm going to, this is going to be my profession? Now, you said you were in your 30s when you first got into Reiki. Did you always plan, like, you know, from the time you knew you had this gift, I mean, did you plan on going into something like that? Or tell us how that progressed, I guess. Like,
yeah, no, I actually didn't. I was, I started my, you know, after school, after high school and everything, I went to business school. I was doing, you know, I was in a secretary, an executive assistant, you know, administrative assistant, all those kind of things. Then I became, I got into marketing, and I, you know, I was always a corporate person. I was in the corporate world, and I was able to, you know, I think it developed my personality a lot being in the corporate world. Like I was able, I got a lot of self-confidence. I got a lot of, you know, I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot about business and things like that. So I'm really glad that I did go down that road, and I did spend a lot of years doing that. But then later, I started to really, you know, I knew I always had this spiritual side, you know, this side of me where I was very connected to. I talked to the angels all the time. I would, you know, every day they were part of my life. And I started to get really more and more interested in it as I got, you know, as time went on. You know, you go through that period in your life where you're just so flipping busy, you know, you've got like your, you know, you've got a marriage, a house, you know, you've got children, you've got all this stuff going on and you're just kind of in survival mode. So I was like in survival mode, I think, for a while. And then when I started, my kids started getting, you know, getting like a little more self-sufficient, they weren't babies anymore. I was able to really start, you know, doing a lot of literally soul searching. Trying to figure out, you know, what it is that just, you know, what I was doing just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like what I was meant to do. So, you know, then I was able to, you know, just, it was really based on, you know, I ended up divorced. I was a single mom for a few years and then I met my husband and I was able to, okay, I was able to back off of, you know, having to worry about making all the money to support the family. And I was able to go back to school and you know, and start really directing, you know, myself to go down the metaphysical avenue, which has just led to incredible things. I mean, my life is amazing. I love it. You know, I love everything I do. I love the ability to help people. I love what I do, you know, and I'm real happy with it.
So, and have you found, like, you know, with the advent of technology and social media now, has that been a help? I'm sure it has been to your practice. Although, I mean, I mentioned word of mouth, and I still think that's the best way to find someone. But has technology been a boon to what you do, in your opinion, as far as finding people?
Absolutely. It's opened up so many doors because of the fact that, you know, you can – you know, before, word of mouth, I mean, still, it's the biggest compliment that you get. I think when somebody calls you and they're like, oh, my friend was just there, or my mom was just there, or my daughter was just there, she said, you know, you gave her the best reading, you know, I want to book with you right away, you know, and so they want to book an appointment. You're like, wow, thanks. You know, it makes you feel good. But
yeah.
But you've got to get other business. You know, it's not all word of mouth. So social media has definitely opened that up. I mean, on Facebook, you know, I have a personal Facebook page like most people do, but I also have a page for my business, you know, Metaphysical Healing, which is the name of my business. And then I have a page for my book that the publisher made. So, you know, on Facebook, and then I have a Twitter account, and then there's LinkedIn, and then there's, you know, WordPress, and there's all these different things that you use to get your information out there. And sometimes I don't even know how it works. How do they find your page? I don't even know. You know, I'm like, I don't even know how they're figuring this stuff out. But, you know, and it gets you a lot of business. And for me, I can do a reading. I can do a healing session. They don't have to live right here. They don't have to be able to come and see me. I can do it over the phone, or I could do it through a chat, or I can do it, you know. I mean, when you're talking about healing, you're talking about, you know, manipulating energy to fix a person's body, or their emotions or their, you know, spiritual side, and what you're doing then is, you know, that those things are all built off of energy. So I'm just using energy to manipulate energy, basically. And you don't need, you know, energy doesn't recognize time and space. So you end up having, you know, you end up having the ability to kill somebody in another country, you know, and not ever actually, you know, be in the same room with them. So that's really cool. And readings, of course, are all based on energy as well. It's based on picking up the feelings from someone else. I find, you know, that it's equally, it's a little different when they're in person, other than, you know, and when they're not, but it's still a really intense, you know, reading. It's still a really great way to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Lisa, I want to ask a couple of questions. A few things came to mind, just sort of in a general sense that, I'm not a psychic, although, you know, I've sort of had my own metamorphosis from being, like, petrified of them to, and this plays out in the book, by the way, so you'll probably get a chuckle out of that as you're reading, to really understanding, based on their ability to help me with a lot of things in my own life. So I came up with some questions because I want to clear up a lot of misperceptions, if we can, while we're on this, broadcast. So first, can you, like, what's the difference between a psychic and a medium? I mean, I know we hear these terms, like, thrown around, and so the average person, I don't think, really understands what the differences are. And are all psychics mediums? Like, how does that work?
Right. Now, there are different types of psychic ability, you know, and everybody's heard about, you know, clairvoyance and, you know, all the different types of abilities. And basically, it just comes down to how and what you receive and in what way. For me, I very rarely see an angel anymore. I very rarely see a spirit guide. I very rarely see a deceased person. You know, once in a while I'll catch something and it's always, I always love that. That's awesome when that happens. But for the most part, I'll be able to pick up, I can feel the energy difference. So a psychic basically, and I hate the word psychic because of the fact that it has been completely and totally just, I don't know, people just, they picture this person, you know, this person who is either, you know, some kind of sideshow
Madame
actor.
Madame Chloe or whatever her name is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think Hollywood and pop, yeah, and I think pop culture has a lot to do with that, too, the way they've been portrayed. Not so much now, I think it's changed, but previously they've been sort of portrayed in a negative way, I think.
Right,
so.
And it's like, I mean, but the bottom line is, what I always tell people is, you know, you go to, like, fortune telling. I don't really believe in fortune telling. I think that some psychics, that's what they do. I think that because of the fact that we all have free will, I can tell a person what's most likely to happen, what the most, likely outcome of a situation that's going on in their life is, but that's based on everything staying the way it is right then and there, their decisions staying, them not having some kind of, oh, well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, because free will changes everything. So if you decide, this is a path that I see you on right now, and I see if you stay on this path, this is going to be the outcome. If you decide to take another turn, you know, and go down another path, then you've just affected your own destiny. So I think that, you know, that there's a little bit of a difference there. I think also that that's why I'm not big into the fortune telling thing. People are like, well, what's going to happen? I can only tell you if you stay where you are right now, what going to happen. I cannot tell you what's going to happen for sure. Nobody, no psychic in the world can tell you 100% sure what's going to be the outcome of something because of the fact that you have free will and you can change your own destiny at any point. So that's like more of that's what people mostly, I think, come to a psychic for, just a regular psychic, or the word I prefer is intuitive. Somebody who is just very in tune to energy and very able to connect with other people's energy. A medium is someone who is able to basically communicate with the other realm, okay, so the other side. That can be, you know, angels, that can be spirit guides, and that can be deceased loved ones of whoever, you know, whether it's the client or not. I do not advertise myself ever as being able to do medium work because it's not up to me. Again, you know, it's like I can't say, you know, you're going to come, you want to come to me to talk to your deceased mother. I can't promise you she's going to come through. I have no control over that at all. I don't know what's going to happen. So I don't ever advertise it, but it is something that happens. You know, most people come in, they're like, is there any energy around me? Are there any deceased people around me? Any ghosts or whatever, you know, and I'm able to pick up on the energy, but I don't always, you know, I can't promise it's going to be the person they want to talk to. So that's why I really don't advertise that a lot.
So I'd take it then the free will is constant, whether you're in a physical body or whether you've passed on. I mean, so if somebody's mother doesn't want to show up or she does want to show up, knowing her daughter's having a reading with you, that's entirely up to that person. Even if they're in spirit form, they still have free will.
Exactly. I mean, even as a spirit, you have free will. I think a lot of times you don't have somebody, you know, when you're first in, what I see is, when people are first in, you know, when they're in deep mourning, when they're in very deep mourning, when they're in, you know, when they're really still suffering from the loss of the person, I think that causes sometimes the spirit to stay away on purpose, because if the person is able to pick up on their energy, or if the person is able to, if you go to a reading and the person you're with picks up on, if it's your mother and she's recently deceased and you're still deeply, deeply grieving for her, they need, you know, a lot of times you need to get past that grieving stage. You need to get past, I mean, not, you're always going to be grieving. It's not that you get past it, but you need to heal some and not be so raw. And the problem is that people, if they're still in that raw state, they don't ever really move on if they're constantly being told something about what a message that person has, or that person is, you know, right there. And for me personally, my mom passed away 5 years ago, and I got to tell you, I very, very rarely feel her or anything, and I know why. I know that, you know, for me, I always thought, well, now that she's gone, I'll just have a different relationship with her. Well, I had to move on with my life. I had to learn to live my life without my mom in it, and I couldn't really do that if I was constantly communicating with her and able to get answers from her and things like that. So she stayed away. She stayed away, and just recently, I'm able to get, you know, a little bit, I'll feel her more and things like that. But, I think as a soul, as a spirit, they have the same decision. They have the same free will. And sometimes that free will involves doing what's best for us, you know, because we're the ones left behind and we have to learn how to move on.
Right. Now, Lisa, are there rules, though, for energy, you know, for all of us, you know what I mean? Are there certain, you don't know how to phrase this question. I mean, I know we all have free will, so I understand that, like whether you're in human form or whether you're back in your spirit form. But are there certain rules that we're required to follow? Like, for example, I think maybe you were alluding to it. Like if a person is still on this earth and they still have their purpose to carry out, is that spirit sort of barred from telling them, oh, you know what, yeah, you're supposed to be doing this or this or this? I don't know if I'm making sense, but I'm just trying
to... No, you are. You're making sense. I know what you're saying, for sure. And I think that, I think there are things that I don't get. And then there are things that I'll get, like in a reading, I'll get something that comes to me with a caution, don't tell them. You know?
Wow.
And I'll be like, okay, really? You know, because if they're like, if you tell them too many details, they're going to mess it up. You know, because they're gonna go and they're gonna try and control it at that point. And some things just have to be left up to, you know, the universe. And so, you know, a lot of times they'll come in and, you know, I'll get, well, not a lot of times, but it does happen. where they'll give me information. They'll be like, don't tell them this part. You know, don't say anything about this. And then, you know, I don't, because I'm going to respect what they say. The other, the other side of it is that you know, when you have, when you're doing a reading and the person, you know, the person has all these questions and you do know what you're supposed to be saying. You do know what you're supposed to be, you are getting information. Once in a while, I have to use my own discretion, and you know, a lot of my repeat clients, I'm like, if I tell them this, you know, if I give them this information, I know that they're going to mess up their path, because they're going to try and control it, you know. So I don't really want to do that. So a lot of different things go into it, you know. There's a lot of different levels to it, and a lot of it is, you know, it's not just like a gift that you just get this information. You have to use some common sense too. You know, there's some common sense that plays into doing a reading, and there are, you know, you have to use that common sense, and not, you know, not say too much that is going to mess somebody up, you know, that's going to make things complicated or change a direction, or give them too much information so that they feel like they have more control than they actually have.
Okay. Now, are you ever permitted to know, I mean, this is kind of a tough question, but like, if somebody's sitting in front of you, are you ever permitted to know, like, when they're going to pass on, or if they're asking about a loved one maybe that's ill? Do you ever get that information? And if so, are you allowed to tell them, or do you use your discretion, as you said, and kind of hold back?
Well, that's a good question. There's some things I know about being on planet Earth that, you know, as a soul, I know that, like, we have three outs, okay? We have a date that this is the longest we can possibly live. This is the final date that, you know, no matter what happens, this is the date you're going to pass, or the time frame. It doesn't have to be a specific date, but it's a time in your life. It's a period in your life. You know, it could be when, okay, well, you're going to be around 63, or you're going to be around, you know, 97, or whatever, and this is it. This is the end. This is when it happens. Then there's the other, you know, there are two other dates that we have beforehand, and those dates are optional. Those dates are dates that we can choose to leave. We can choose to not be, we can choose to not continue our lives. It's an unconscious decision. It's not something that we're like, okay, well, I'm out of here. You know, it's not like a suicide thing. It's just like maybe an accident, that happens, that you could have chosen to survive, or you could have chosen not to. It could be an illness that you get that you either fight your way through, or you allow yourself to pass. And the thing is, you don't do it. You know, you might think you're doing everything you can physically to survive. You're doing, you know, but it's a subconscious decision that you've already made. I think it happens, you know, while we're sleeping. And, you know, that's kind of how the date works, you know, the dates work. But so if everything isn't, like, if our soul isn't doing exactly what we want it to be doing, if our soul isn't following the path that we had already decided we were going to take, the certain path. We're here. We want, you know, our souls reincarnate in order to learn more and to develop better. I believe to become more godlike, you know, and the more close to God. So if we're not on the right path, if somewhere things have gotten off, or maybe we decide, again, on an unconscious level, that we came back too soon. We needed to take more time, you know, on the other side to plan. Whatever we decide, we do it unconsciously, and we then say, okay, I'm going to go back to the spirit realm. I'm going to go back to the other side, and I'm going to regroup, and I'm going to. So you've got a couple of other opportunities to get out earlier than the predestined date, you know, of your death is. So it's a little weird. It's a little complicated, but it's also very interesting because we have so many opportunities to make changes. I think too, though, that we're getting back to more specifically your question, I can tell whether somebody has, a lot of times I can tell if somebody has is going to live a long life, or if they're not. I can tell if they're sick, whether they're going to, like if they're very sick, whether or not they're going to beat it. You know, they're going to beat whatever disease they're fighting. I don't necessarily give that information, though. You know, I'm not going to necessarily tell that person that. If I sense that they're not going to survive, and they say they have some, they're battling cancer or something, and I don't sense they're going to survive, I'm not going to tell them that. I mean, I'm going to encourage them to fight with everything they have if that's what they want to do. You know, I'm going to empower them to do that and not have them, you know, think that they're doomed. I mean, at that point, again, you're taking away their free will.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Now, Lisa, on another, like kind of going in another direction, do you have to be, you yourself, now when you're reading somebody, do you have to be in a meditative state to pick up on somebody else's energy or their spirit guides, or can you perceive something about that person, like just by being in their company? Like, for example, the show Long Island Medium, sometimes they'll show her and she's like, I don't know, she could be walking through the mall or in a store or in the supermarket and just literally just pass somebody by and go, and then turn around and go, oh my gosh, I have a message from your father. You know, it, how does it work for you? And is it different for different people in your profession?
I think it's different for everybody. You know, I certainly, for me, she goes up, Long Island Medium, I watch her, I love her, she's awesome.
She's so funny, she's hilarious.
She's just hysterical, and she's very gifted. And the fact that she goes up to people in the grocery store and is like, can I tell you something? You know, I find that hysterical. When I'm at the grocery store, not that I ever go to the grocery store, anybody who knows me knows that I am anti-grocery store and every other domestic thing there is. I'm completely against it. Anyway, so, but if I'm at the grocery store, I'm thinking, I got to get through the grocery store. And for me, I'm fighting off other people's emotions. So what I'm doing is I'm sensing all these people who are rushing, who are sad, who are happy, who are stressed out, whatever. I have all these emotions because I'm picking up on everybody in the room and what they're feeling, and that's the empathic side of what I do. And it's frustrating as all get out because you're lost. You're like, you know, you just don't know what to, you're trying to just like get through, and it's like trying to wade through really heavy water. You know, you're just trying to get through. So I'm certainly not saying, oh, I see this dead person hanging out with this person. I'm just in pure survival mode, you know, But that's the empathic side of me. And I think that, you know, that's why in my book I talk about how I don't go to the mall at Christmas time. I don't go to amusement parks anymore. I can't handle huge crowds of people because the bigger the crowd, the more the emotion. The more emotions that are coming at me. So I have to totally, like if I'm going to a concert or something like that, I have to prepare myself for days before I go, you know, just protecting myself and just having a plan of how I'm going to not allow these emotions to affect me, in a serious way. So, a lot of times people say, oh, Lisa's so claustrophobic. And that's how I've always explained it my entire life. I can't be in this crowd. I'm too claustrophobic, but it's not really claustrophobia. It's bottom line, too many people, too many emotions, too much energy, all affecting mm-hmm. mine. And I you know, the more it is, the harder it is to fight off.
Wow, you know, that's, I'm really glad you mentioned, I never thought about it that way. It's just somebody that's, you know, not gifted in that area. You know, that's an interesting point. So I don't blame you. Now that you've explained
yeah,
it that way.
Yeah, it's hard. It's actually really hard. So, well, you know, I think that everybody's gifts work differently. I don't think everybody has empathic abilities. I always call an empathic ability as if there were a psychic gift that you could return, that would be the one that most people would return. It's hard. It's
yes.
difficult. It's like, it's a difficult thing to survive with. And a lot of people have it. There are a lot of people that do have it. Not everybody and not all psychics have it, but there are certainly a lot of people that do. And some people that don't, they don't even realize it's a psychic gift. Because they just think they're like, there are people that can walk into a home and you're invited to a couple's house for dinner, and they just have this raging fight before you get there. And you walk in and you're like, whoa, the energy feels really tense, really strange. You're picking up empathically, you're picking up on the energy between those people that's now in their home because of where the fight took place. People that have that, people that can pick up on their children's emotions or people they work with, people that are drained by other people. A lot of times you have an empathic ability that is just maybe not as intense as mine, to the point where you have to, you know, stay in your house most of the time in order to survive. But you definitely sense it. You definitely know that there's more going on.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in my own life, I can relate to that because I had to end a 10-year friendship a few years back because the woman in question was like a psychic vampire. Like, I would realize, and I knew it, and I kept thinking, well, you know, deep down she's a good person, which is why I kept continuing the friendship. But I got to a point where I just couldn't take being in her company anymore because I could walk in and I could be in a really good mood and I could be feeling really great, and within minutes, I guess I was absorbing her energy, and I'd leave her house feeling so depressed and upset and unhappy, and she was just so negative. And so I got to a point where I had to be like, you know what, I wish you the very best, I wish you happiness, you know, but I just can't, we just cannot continue this friendship anymore for my own sake. And, you know, so I can kind of relate to what you're saying from my own experiences.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I have a whole chapter of my book devoted to energy vampires, and it's something that we all wrestle with because we all have energy vampires in our lives, and they're just people who just, you know, suck you dry. You're just like, oh my God, you know, they just being around them is exhausting, you know. And there are different types of them, and I, you know, talk about all the different types of energy vampires in my book, but. I think that, you know, for the most part, it's a very difficult thing to learn how to manage these people because they can change your mood in the snap of a finger. You know, you can be in a great mood and they're, you know, Debbie Downer comes into the room and, you know, never has anything positive to say, you know, and it's like, oh, blah, 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 poor me, poor me, poor me. And then before you know it, you're like, wow, I feel horrible. I need a nap. You know, and there are ways to protect yourself. There are ways to not allow those people to get to you. I use humor most of the time. You know, I'll like, as soon as I see the person or whatever, I'll just use humor. But there's, you know, I'll just make jokes about it and let it go. But there are other times where, you know, it's not so funny. Like, you know, you're just not in that place to be able to manage them. A lot of times, like, the phone will ring and I'll see who it is and I'll be like, oh, do I have the energy to deal with this right now? You know, do I have the energy to deal with this person right now? And I send them the voicemail.
Been there.
You know, and I'll be,
I've been
and
there.
Then, yeah, and then all of a sudden you build up the energy, you build up the power, and you're like, all right, I'm going to return this phone call now. I can do this, you know. And you kind of motivate yourself to be able to call the person back. It's horrible, but these people are a lot of times our family members. We have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
But to, you know, to have them in our lives, it's not like people we can cut out, like, you know, you were able to do with your friend, where, I mean, it's not that that's easy, because it's not, especially somebody you've had in your life a while, but when it's a family member or your boss or a coworker and you love your job, you know what I mean? You
exactly.
have no choice but to but to learn how to manage to coexist, I guess, with this person, you know, and it's crazy.
Now, Lisa, on the flip side of that, though, could it be that these people are there to teach you a lesson and maybe bringing reincarnation kind of back into the discussion? Could that be what's going on in some of those cases?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reincarnation part of things, the soul lessons that we have to learn, there are a lot of different levels to all of that, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of different things that, you know, people allow themselves to get caught up in some situations, you know, that altered their personalities, that made them. You know, and a lot of times psychic vampires, they're not psychic vampires, they're not energy vampires forever. You know, it's just that there is a period of their life where maybe they're disconnected spiritually, maybe they're disconnected and, you know, emotionally in some way, maybe they're going through something, and during this period that they're an energy vampire and they're sucking the life out of people. Yes, there are people that are, you know, 24/7, 365, you know, they're just always, always, always miserable and will be for their entire lives. I mean, you know, and at that point, I think that's a lost soul. I think that's somebody who either reincarnated too early, who just got off their path and is just spiritually disconnected at that point. So, but for the most part, I think it's periods of time. I mean, you can look at your own life and know that you've been negative or you've just been like blah, you know, about things, and you can look at your own life and see that there have been periods in your life when it's been like that. So I think we all have the capability of once in a while being an energy vampire, but I think that for the most part once we're on track soul wise, once we're on track, we are not energy vampires. We are at that point, you know, once we're on track, doing what we're supposed to be doing, living like we're supposed to be living, that makes us, that's going to keep us, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing as a soul. So that's going to take us in the direction of being more of a helper, a light worker, in an awakened state instead of in the dormant kind of sleeping, sucking the life out of everybody else for survival. State.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And that does make a lot of sense. Now, with reincarnation, though, kind of getting back to that for a second, because I just thought of another question. So, is it true? And I've heard this explained to me, you know, by others, you know, that you know before you decide to come back to Earth, that you do make a contract with God, and you talked about, you know, the three different exit points and, you know, the final one. But beyond that, I mean, do you determine your parents and a lot of the situations you'll deal with when you're in,
all
you
of
know,
that,
human form again?
I think all of that is predetermined. I think that we make it's a contract that we make that, you know, that we decide, you know, once we pass over, I call it going to the spa. That's what I call it. We take some time off. I call it the spa all the time. My clients laugh at me and they're like, I'm like, oh no, your mom's still at the spa. It's okay. You know, it's okay. And she's like, the spa. And I'm like, yeah, you know, but it's just like a place where they rejuvenate. They get used to being in spirit form again and let go of all that earthly stuff, you know, all the things that we deal with being in human form. That heaviness, it's like a heaviness that we carry with us. So they, you know, what we do is when we're in spirit form, we decide absolutely all of those things. We decide what life we're going to, what lessons did we not learn? Where did we mess up in our last life? Where did we do really well? What did that life teach us? And then we decide, okay, I still need to work on this. I still need to work on that. So those are the things I want to work on. Then you look at, okay, the people that would be best suited for your parents. the people that are going to be able to teach you based on their path as well. I think it's a very complicated thing. I think there are so many levels to it because I think we have soul families and we have people that we just continually reincarnate with to work issues out with, or because they add something to our lives, or because they are, you know, somebody we learn from in every lifetime, because they're familiar to us and they give us comfort because of the fact that, you know, we know them. That's the whole soulmate thing. It's not like one person. We have a soul family. We have a group of soulmates. And those people are just naturally you're comfortable with them from the first minute you meet, you know, in like human form. From that first moment, you're like, wow, you feel a connection with that person. And sometimes it ends up being a great thing, sometimes not. Sometimes it ends up being a romantic thing, sometimes not. Your soulmate can be anybody in your life. So, you know, we learn from all of that, and we continue to basically fix ourselves, make ourselves as close to like I always say, godlike as we can be. And I think that's all of our goal is to, you know, our goals are to be as close to to godlike as possible. And that's always been my feeling, you know, and a lot of what I've been able to do my whole life is I remember, like, you know, and I talk about this in the book too, I remember things. Like, I remember being in spirit form. Like, the things that are erased or are supposed to be erased when you reincarnate, I held on to some of it. And I don't know why. I'm assuming it was supposed to happen. It wasn't just a glitch, you know. But I think it was supposed to. I remember certain things about the other side. I remember the process when you're in a spirit form. I remember that rejuvenation place that you go to just let go of all the trauma. And it is trauma living on Earth. It is traumatic. And I remember being able to send, and you can spend as much time in that, you know, in that rejuvenation phase, you know, it can be many, 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 many years, you know, that you spend there. And you can just, you know, let go of all those things and, you know, depending on the traumas you've had, you know, in your living life, in your human life, you know, you may need to spend a lot of time there. Then you start working on the next life. Then you start preparing for the next life, you know, and who you're going to come back with, and absolutely, you know, who are going to be your parents, who's going to be your sister and brothers, maybe in some cases, who are you going to marry? You know, I think the details can be very detailed. I mean, they can be very, everything can be down to, to a T, like every little thing assigned. But I don't think that it's not always like that. I don't think we're always assigned, like, okay, this is going to be who you're going to marry. Because, okay, like for me, I had two children with my first husband. Certainly, they were meant to be, no doubt about it. They're amazing people. They're amazing kids. I know that they're going to do great things with their life. Those children were supposed to be created between my husband and I, but I was not supposed to stay married to him. So we have... You know, there are things that we go through, and we end up on a path that sometimes we're like, how did this happen? You know, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And but you, when you think about it, and it, like for me, when you can remember the process, you know that these things were supposed to happen. So, you know, marriages fail, people die, things happen, and it turns the people that are left behind, it turns their path around. And a lot of times that's the way it was supposed to be. You know, that's the way it was supposed to work out.
Okay. Now, are you ever able to take a client, say, back to that point where they can remember, maybe just before they left the spa to come back to Earth? Are you able to do that? Has that ever been done?
To be able to, what do you mean?
Like, in other words, can you regret, like, say I come to you and I say, Lisa, you know what, I really want to remember that period, like, when I was still a soul just before I took a body. Can you regress me back so that I can remember that? Or is that another one of those deals where if you're not permitted to remember that for whatever reason, it's not going to happen kind of thing? Like,
so, yeah, past life regressions. This is a great, I love past life regressions. We've talked about this before, and I have to tell you, if anybody gets the opportunity, I do them for I'm a certified hypnotist, so I can actually do past life regressions. I do hypnosis for all kinds of things, you know, but past life regressions are fascinating. And absolutely, you're allowed to remember things from a past life. You're in a relaxed state, and you're under hypnotism, but hypnotism isn't like people think, where somebody can make you clap like a duck and all that kind of stuff that's on stage in high school. It's not, you know, that's not it. It's basically just a very relaxed state that they take you to, where you're able to go back in and see. Maybe for most, I mean, it's not a long thing, so usually you go back to the moment of death, or the most important moment of that lifetime, and when you do that, when you're able to, you know, see that the most important part, then you're able to, that important piece is what maybe you carried over into this life. So it's either, for example, I had a very strange issue with always being afraid that I was going to leave my kids without a mother. Something was going to happen to me. And I was perfectly healthy. There was no rational reason for me to have this fear, but I had an intense fear of leaving my kids without a mom. And I just kept thinking, that can never happen. I cannot allow this to happen. I have to make sure I stay healthy. I have to make sure that I drive carefully. I have to make sure I look both ways before I cross the street, you know, all of this. And I needed to really be careful. You know, I just thought that, oh, okay, it was irrational. It made no sense. It kept me up at night, you know. So I had a past life regression, my first past life regression. And this was, you know, my kids were probably middle school age at this point. Maybe late elementary, and I had a past life regression, and it took me back. I went back to my moment of death, and I died during childbirth, and I had already had four children. So the children were all surrounding me as I'm dying, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm leaving my kids behind. Kids aren't going to have a mom, and they were all very young. And when I came out of that regression, I was like, that's it. That's why I have this fear. That's why this fear exists in me, is because of the fact that, you know, it already happened. It happened in another life. And because of the fact that I felt that guilt at death of that, during that lifetime, that guilt was there at death. I carried it over into my next life, as a fear. People that have, like, fear of heights. Well, we don't even want to go there. What might have happened to them that they have a fear of heights? But heights or water, you know, did they drown? You know, did they drown in another life? I mean, some people's fears, just there is no rational reason for them during this lifetime. So I think that when we go back, you know, when we go into past life regressions, it does explain a lot about us. It explains a lot about the issues that we have in this life, because there are issues that, you know, real things that happened to us in a previous life.
Now, Lisa, when you go back, like, you know, so you're having a regression, what is that like? I mean, do you relive that experience? Do you feel things, or is it more like you're kind of watching a movie and it's like you know it's you in another life, in another human form, you know it's your soul, but you're just kind of watching it as a movie? I mean, do you feel the pain? I mean, how does that work?
For me, I mean, I can only talk from my experiences and from the experiences that I have had with clients who I've done past life regressions with. I've seen people cry. I think you absolutely feel it. I felt that guilt. I felt, you know, I felt a lot of different, you know, when I've had, like I said, three. I've definitely felt the... I've definitely felt the pain as I was seeing it, but you are more seeing it. It's more, you know you're not living it right then and there. You know you're watching.
Okay.
It's like having a memory and reviewing the memory in really deep detail. So it's kind of like you're saying with a movie, because you do actually see the movie happening. You know, you do see it happening. But at the same time, it's like a movie that you're completely involved with, like so intensely involved with, that you're actually, you know, like, I don't know, like Ghost with Patrick Swayze. I mean, I'm sorry, I cannot watch that movie without bawling like a baby, you know? I mean, it's like you get so into the movie. Yeah, that's a killer.
Yeah.
That one kills me. And you get so into the movie and you're so like drawn in that you're actually feeling the other people in their pain, you know, their suffering. So it's like that. You're still feeling it,
okay,
but you're seeing it, really. It's hard to explain. But some people have different experiences with past life regressions, too. And, it takes so much time to do a past life regression. It's a good couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours every time you do a session with somebody. And it's not one of the cheaper services that that hypnotists offer. But if you get the opportunity and you can do it, I really recommend everybody do it, because it just does. For some reason, you do go back to the most important lifetime, and you do go back to the thing that is affecting you. So, you know, I was going through this whole guilt thing about leaving my kids, and I think that's why I went to that specific lifetime, because I was trying to make sense of why I had this irrational in my thought feeling, you know, of abandoning of my, you know, leaving my kids without a mom. So, you know, I think because of that, what I was going through at that time, that's why I went to that life. And I think, like, if I did another one today, you know, I haven't had a past life regression done in a couple of years, probably 3 years. If I did another one today, I would remember a completely different life, because I'm going through different things now. You know, I'm at a different place in my life. So I'd go to a different lifetime to explain some of the issues that I may be carrying with me now.
Okay,
cool.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
It's very cool. It's very cool to do. I always say, if you get a chance, go for it.
Now, Lisa, is it possible that in a session, now, I understand what you're saying, kind of the lifetime that most pertains to something you're going through in the current lifetime will come up, but, I mean, is it possible that you might, like in one session, go to a couple of different lifetimes, or is it typically the person goes to that one that's most relevant to their
current
life?
I never take anybody further than one. I think it's traumatic to a degree. It's not traumatic bad, but it's very emotional. You know, maybe emotional is a better word.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's an emotional situation. So I don't want anybody to go back and do a, you know, remember another one. That, you know, and it takes so long to get that person there. You've got to, like I said, you've got to be in a very, you know, very relaxed state. It's like the theta brainwave activity state. That state right before you drift off to sleep, you know, that feels so, so good. And if anybody, like, wakes you up at that point, you're like, oh, you like that relaxation period. So, yeah, exactly, because it's just like it feels so good. But that's kind of the state that we're going for. And it does take some time and some, you know, especially if somebody's nervous, which they usually are. And, you know, it's a matter of getting the person very comfortable and, you know, and the way they're lying down, or the way they're, you know, their position, whatever, their temperature. There are so many different things that we have to consider that it really does take a lot of time to get that person to the point where they can actually experience the regression. So, you know, I think that it's just, to me, I don't think you could fit more than one of those in a day. I'm sure there are past life regressionists that do fit more than one lifetime in, but, you know, for me, I think one's enough. You know, one's enough for one guy.
Now, Lisa, can you do that over the phone too? I mean, or is it better to be in person in the case of a past life regression?
I think a past life regression is better in person. I got to tell you, the ones I've done that I had success with personally, that I was regressed, were in person. I've also tried, like, you know, people have CDs and things that you can buy, or, you know, MP3 downloads that with a meditation that'll take you to a past life regression. That has never worked for me. So I've never been able to be, you know, to have a past life regression happen when I was listening to, you know, somebody talk to me and not actually in their physical presence. So I don't recommend it that way, and I don't think I would want to do it over the phone with anybody. I never have, and I don't think I would, only because I don't think that you can truly hypnotize somebody over. I can't, at least. I'm sure there are people that can, but I can't really do it over the phone comfortably. I'm not going to be comfortable enough with it, and if I'm not comfortable, how am I going to make them comfortable? You know, how am I going to make my client comfortable? If they're in person, I'm going to be able to make them comfortable. And that's like, for me, it's all about, you know, I hate to say it's all about me, but it's all about me in a way that I'm not going to take somebody's money and say I might be able to do this. I have to know I'm going to be able to do it if I'm going to take somebody's money. So, you know, I'm not going to offer somebody something I can't back up for sure.
No, and that makes sense. And I was thinking too, as you were talking, that you also, when the person is right there in front of you, have a little bit more control over the environment as well. Like if you want the lights to be dim, for example, or, and you know, when you're on the phone, you can't really be sure that the person on the other end is kind of setting it up, setting the stage. So
that's
to speak.
Absolutely true. I'll do a meditation. I'll do a relaxation meditation. Like there are people that will call and they'll be like, you know, can we do a meditation over the phone so that I can fall asleep, so I can sleep good tonight, because they've been having some insomnia issues or whatever. I'll do that. I have no problem doing that. I can talk somebody through a meditation. I'll be like, okay, make sure the lights are off or dim. Make sure you're comfortable. Make sure you're warm. That's easy. You know, that's an easy. You're just comforting them. You're relaxing them. That's easy to do on the phone. You can't really, when it's a passive aggression, if they hit a place where it was traumatic, you know, a lot of what I see from their eye movements, I see from the tension in their body, and I can bring them, I can skip over that period, or I can skip past that memory and move to another memory. If I can't see it, I don't know what they're going through. I don't, you know, I'm not going to know as much. Past life regressions are so serious and effective in our emotions. You know, that we really need to be careful. I'm not somebody, you know, not only does it not work for me, you know, to do one over the phone, but it also, you know, or over from a CD or whatever, I would not feel good about that at all. I would not feel comfortable taking somebody through a past life regression over the phone. It's too intense. You know, it's a very intense thing. And if they get to a place where they're remembering something that's traumatic and they're not processing it well, you know, I can snap them out of it really quick. I can bring them completely out of the hypnotized state. You know, but if I can't see them, I can't. So
Lisa, what would you recommend for somebody who's interested in having a regression? And maybe they don't live near you, because I would highly recommend if they were able to see you to do that. But what are some of the things that they should look for when determining, okay, you know what, this person, I'm going to make an appointment with this person? Because, you know, what's some of the criteria, I guess, that people should look for in a hypnotist?
Yeah, I think it's important that it's somebody who has some experience with hypnotism, obviously. Certified hypnotists are always good. Their education is important, you know, to make sure that they have some sort of education in doing it, because you do, it, you know, there's a lot to it. There's some psychology involved. There's a little bit of, you've got to have some compassion. There are some things that you need to, you know, to actually, even a little bit of a psychic gift, you know, even an intuitive gift, because, you know, I'm trying to sense what they're feeling. It's not only what I'm able to see, but what I'm able to sense that they're going through at that moment. So, you know, you want somebody who's very educated in hypnotizing, and you want somebody who's educated in past life regression hypnotism, which is an entirely different thing. You know, somebody can hypnotize you to quit smoking, and they don't have to have the same skills You know, that skill is, you know, it's a skill, but at the same time, past life regressions, it's a different level. It's a completely different level of the whole process. So, you know, I think that it really just depends on what you're looking for. But if you're looking for a true past life regressionist, actually look for somebody who does specifically past life regression, you know, like not just a hypnotist.
Sure. Okay. Well, no, that makes a lot of sense. And so I hope, hopefully, you know, anyone listening that's interested in that will take that advice to heart, because it just seems like that's something that's so important that you really have to make sure that you choose the right person for sure.
Yeah, I think you do. I think it has to be somebody that you're comfortable with. You know, I think a phone conversation ahead of time is very important. It needs to be somebody you're very comfortable with, because they've got to be able to relax you, and you have to trust them. You know, there's a lot of trust involved in any kind of hypnotizing, but especially past life regressions, you really have to have a level of comfort with that person that's doing this for you. So, you know, I don't feel like you shouldn't interview, you know, the person over the phone. Absolutely. You know, it's, like I said, it's not a cheap session. So, you know, for sure, you know, interview the person on the phone first. Make sure there's somebody you feel comfortable with, or even interviewing, you know, even talking in person, you know, seeing where you're going to be. All of that is also okay. You know, I'm very comfortable with people, you know, that come to me with a lot of questions before just like, oh, that'd be cool, let's do that, that'll be fun. Well, it is fun. It is very cool. It definitely is. But it can also be, you know, intense. It usually is intense. So, you know, looking back, it's something that it affects you forever. It affects your soul. It affects your spirit. It affects your current life. To know, you know, it's bizarre. It's just there's a lot of craziness. There are also ways. Like another thing I do is past life reading, which is not taking you to that point. That's just a psychic reading where we're specifically focusing on your past lives. And, you know, and I'm able to psychically get into your, you know, your soul and see some of the lives you've lived and why you lived them, what your lesson was at that point. So if you're somebody who's afraid of, you know, to be hypnotized, but you're still fascinated by past life, you know, your past lives, you could do a past life reading, which is completely different than a past life regression.
Okay, good. And actually, Lisa, I can give my own testimonial on this. When you and I, you know, I believe it was back in December, and I actually spoke with you on the phone, and we had a reading. I don't know that we specifically said, okay, we're going to do a past life reading, but I asked you, because I was having an issue where this person from my past was constantly on my mind, but I knew it wasn't coming from me. I wasn't, like, consciously trying to think about this person. And you were able to determine that this person was from a previous lifetime, and you went through the whole description, and it really made the current situation, it cleared up a lot of things about the current situation, because I was so frustrated going, I'm not consciously doing this, I don't want to think about this person, but it's kind of like they're just sitting there in my mind without me having to do anything. And you kind of, why don't you explain, I mean, you explained it was an energy cord, I believe you called it?
Yeah, an etheric cord, yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so you were able to pull up that lifetime. Okay.
Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot during readings. You know, I'm able to tell what's going on with a person, and you know, with a person in their current life, especially if when it's a relationship with a specific other person, and I can then sense, okay, you're having these issues with this person because, you know, in this past lifetime, and like I said, a lot of times, most of the time, we do reincarnate with the same people over and over again, and a lot of times we're working on the same issues over and over again, you know.
Oh boy.
And yeah, I know, right? It's like ugh, nobody likes to hear that. They're always like, really? I got to deal with this person again? I'm always like, you know what? Just get the issues, whatever's going on, get to a place of, like, forgiveness and just being able to live with the person, because guess what? It's going to carry over into another life if you don't. So, you know, you might as well get it over in this one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let me ask you a question, too. When you do, and I believe in my case, it was a situation where I think the Archangel Michael came through pretty strongly in my reading, and so you advised me to kind of ask for his help in sort of severing this cord. And, you know, it did work, but I find that I have to go back and do that. Maybe I'm just not doing it properly. But I'll be fine for a while, and all of a sudden it'll start up again. I'll be like, okay, let me ask for, like, to sever the cord again. Does that happen, or is it just a matter of maybe it runs so deep that you have to do it a couple of times before it ends? Like, how does that work?
When you do a etheric cord severing, I do them for clients all the time, but I also do them, I try to teach people how to do them themselves, like I did with you. And you want to sever the cord, you want to sever the attachment that person has to you, but you don't want to stop. If you love that person, I mean, you know, just because they're draining you, just because they're, there's an aspect of their personality that's not good for you, it doesn't mean that you're not supposed to, you know, it doesn't mean you have to cut them out of your life. So, when you sever an etheric cord, I always call in Archangel Michael to do the actual severing. Again, it's a meditation, and you call in Archangel Michael. You know, you get yourself into a relaxed state. You call in Archangel Michael and ask him to sever any unhealthy cords that are attached to you that are draining you. Now, can they reattach? Absolutely, they can reattach if it's somebody in your life that's still in your life, and you're not protecting yourself. So if you're not like getting to a point where you're able to deal with the person's negative energy or whatever it is that they're doing to you, whatever it is that they're the effect they have on you. Like I said earlier in the show, I use humor. You know, I use humor. I try and fight it off with just making jokes. You know, about the experience that I have with the person. I don't necessarily say it out loud, but that's how I protect myself. is by thinking some funny thought about what this person, you know, how this person affects me. So if it's somebody that's still in your life, they can absolutely reconnect if you don't stop it from happening. You know, the connection, as long as there's a good energy exchange, as long as it's a healthy energy exchange, there's nothing wrong with an etheric cord. Etheric cords are good. You know, that's the thing that gets us to, think about somebody and all of a sudden you think, oh, I haven't talked to so-and-so for a while, and boom, the phone rings and they're on the phone. That etheric cord that's connected is what gives you that intuition about each other, you know, or you sense that something's going, you know, something's wrong with a family member, or you sense that something's, that your friend's upset about something. You know, it's that little nudge that you get about something going on with somebody you're close to. That's through the etheric cord energy exchange that's happening. So that's a healthy thing. But it's not a healthy thing when it's somebody negatively impacting your life, you know, negatively affecting you.
Or it could be a case. I mean, so it sounds like in order for this cord to even happen, that the person on the other end has to be thinking about you as well, right? Does it works both ways?
That a lot of times is what sparks it going, is that, you know, what happens is like one person can be thinking about this person, and they're not necessarily thinking of you at that moment, but you've just sent them energy through the cord because of the fact that you're thinking of them. And that kind of sparks it on their end, and they'll be like, oh, you know, and they'll have some memory of you or some kind of thing, and then boom, all of a sudden you're exchanging energy like crazy, you know, and that can be a bit, like I said, it can be a good thing, but it can also, you know, depending on that person's influence in your life and the way they influence you, it can be negative too. So it just depends.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I think each person knows for themselves whether it's a good or bad thing. You know, I think is it a case where it's up to, I mean, maybe sometimes it's obvious, but I think in a lot of cases, like I'll just speak for myself, it's just, yeah, I mean, it could be negative, but it could also just be maybe trying to let go of some memories of, of what happened before, knowing like we both had to move on, kind of thing. So I guess, I mean, I'm sure there could be a million reasons for these.
Yeah, but I think, you know, what's really important is to realize that, you know, a lot of times the healing takes place between two people, or at least on one side, you know, on your side, is if you just let go of the situation and forgive the person. And you know, another big one of my things that I preach about all the time, that I, you know, talk to all my clients about is forgiveness. And if when you get to a place where you're forgiving, you're not, if you really are thinking of it as you know, as somebody that, okay, this person is human, they've done horrible things to me, or they make me feel like this when I talk to them, or that when I talk to them, and they're negative, you know, it's a negative kind of feeling. They make me unhappy, whatever, and, you know, they bring me down. If you can understand that, okay, they're human, they're going through their own trials and tribulations, they're going through their own issues, and let it go, forgive them for being, you know, at this place in their life, I think that then the energy exchange becomes different, because at that point you're not angry. You're not holding on to stuff. You're not, you know, you're not like feeling resentment towards that person. You know, and I think that's a big, mm-hmm. that's a great way to control the etheric cords, and a great way to control the energy that other people have over your life is to, you know, just allow yourself to relax and recognize that, you know, none of us are perfect. None of us are perfect beings. You know, we're all here fighting the same fight, trying to survive, you know, being in human form. And we all are going, you know, towards working on our own specific soul issues. And we're just all at different levels of spirituality. We're all at different levels of awakening, you know, spiritually. We're just all different places, you know, and I think when you live your life understanding and forgiving and, you know, letting go, that the attachments are not something, you know, I don't really have any negative etheric cord attachments anymore because of the fact that that's how I try to live my life. Do I get mad? Absolutely. Do I get angry at somebody? Do I feel wrong? Do I, you know, absolutely. And I talk about this in the book too, is, you know, I spend a lot of time licking my wounds, no doubt. You know, I spend a lot of time, you know, it takes me some time to get over something. If I have like some kind of altercation with somebody or whatever, it may take me a little while to get over, and I, you know, but I always do. You know, I do. Sometimes it takes a couple of minutes, sometimes a couple of hours, sometimes a couple of months. You know, it just depends, you know, and that's okay. You know, you're human and you're allowed to spend some time getting over things. But the bottom line is you do not want to have that negative energy building, because it does create illness, it creates disease, and it makes us unhappy.
Right. Absolutely. And I see forgiveness, and I'll ask you to weigh in on this. It's not saying that what that person did was right if they hurt you. It's just that you're saying, okay, well, I'm letting go because I'm not willing to carry around the pain that it caused me anymore.
And that's absolutely correct. Right. That's absolutely right. And I think that's the most misunderstood part of forgiveness. People think that they have to forgive, they have to say, oh, it's okay that that you did this to me. It's okay that you, you know, that you hurt me. You know, it's okay that you cheated on me. It's okay that you, you know, horrible things, even physical violence. None of those things are okay. It's not that it's okay. What you're doing is you're saying, I'm not allowing you to have one more second of influence over my life. I'm not allowing you to affect my life for one more second in a negative way. I'm letting it go. I'm forgiving you for me, not for you. I'm not releasing you from what you did. I'm releasing me. You know, I'm releasing myself from the situation. And and in order to do that, well, you've got to sometimes, you know, just swallow the pride and let it go, you know, and just recognize that humans are humans.
Yes, they are. And we all are. So we're all going to learn. So it's Yes. And Lisa, what are some of, just getting back to a second to, you know, we were talking at the top of the show about, like, misperceptions about psychics. One of the big ones that I come across, because, you know, if I tell people, oh, you know, I had this really great reading with Lisa and it went really well, and they'll be like, oh, well, you know, why couldn't you tell you what the lottery numbers are going to be tomorrow? You know, me as somebody that has really come from a place of really being afraid to really understanding more just through my experiences with people in your profession, you know, good, legitimate people who are doing good work. You know, so I've had my own, like, sort of transformation where that's concerned, but I still see so many other people that just really don't get it, like, what this is all about.
It's absolutely true, and there's some people that are never going to get it, and that's okay, you know. You know, I feel like people are really missing out on something really amazing when they're dealing with, we all have gifts. Everybody does, whether or not you recognize it or not. Everybody has some sort of psychic ability, and it's just a matter of drawing it out. It's a matter of, you know, how profound it is when you're born, absolutely, how genetically, you know, it runs in your family, that sort of thing. But for the most part, it's also a matter of wanting to build it and create it and respect it and honor it as a gift. People don't always understand how it works. I wish I knew what tomorrow's lottery numbers were going to be, and that would be awesome. It doesn't work that way. If somebody asks me a question and they'll be like, so, you know, what's going to happen with this or that? I don't know. How would I know that? How I don't know what's going to happen because it's not something that, that I can, you have complete control over so much of this, you know, and it's not, I can only lead you down, a path that's going to be the most healthy route for you, but not, you know, not controlling everything. So I do, there are a lot of misconceptions. It's not something that people turn on and off. It's not something that people can, you know, just sense everything. Everybody's gift is different. Everybody's able to do different things, you know, with their gift. Everybody has, you know, for me, I don't hear voices. I don't hear somebody talking to me. When I'm receiving information, I get thoughts. Thoughts come to my head that are not my thoughts. And I know that there are thoughts that are not my thoughts, and that's how I know it's a psychic connection, you know, that I'm being told something. And then I sense the energy frequency, so I can tell you whether or not it's an angel that is giving me the information, or I can tell you if it's a spirit guide, because their energy frequencies are different. A deceased loved one, I can say, you know, their energy frequency is different. So, you know, I'm able to determine who it is that's giving me the information to some degree, but it's not like they're standing there in front of me waving at me or talking to me and I'm hearing what they're saying. It comes in thoughts. Other people can absolutely see, you know, who it is. Other people can hear the actual voice coming from, you know, coming from whoever is giving them the information. We all work differently, and I think that that's a misconception. And it's, you know, people that think that we can guess the lottery number, that we can find missing objects, that's another one all the time. Well, if you're psychic, why can't you find this missing child, or why don't you know where your own earring is? It doesn't work like that. You know, I'm not able to see where missing objects are. I don't know. I wish I could find missing children. I wish I could do that, you know, but I can't. If I go to a situation, can I pick up on energy? Absolutely. If I go to where something traumatic happened, can I tell? If I walk into a house, can I tell whether it's haunted? Or if there are spirits still lingering or whatever? Yeah, I can tell that, but I'm not going to be able to, to say, okay, this missing child is here. I can't do that. There are people that can, God bless them, and, and that's awesome, but that's not a gift that I personally have. So everybody's gifts are different. I'm sure some people they do know where their missing earring is all the time. I don't. I lose earrings all the time. You know, so
Saint Anthony usually works for me when I lose something. So.
Yeah, because I always say, you know, because I get into, like, I always say that there are fairies around that hide our shiny stuff. So I'll be like, all right, fairies, bring back my earring. That's enough. Bring me back my earring. So that was the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, Lisa, since you mentioned haunted houses, that brought up something else in my mind. What's the difference between, say, a spirit and a ghost for anybody that maybe doesn't know? Or is there a distinction between the two?
There's a ghost is usually someone who is a spirit that's still lingering on the physical plane, on our plane. A spirit is someone who most often has crossed over. But people do confuse the two, and they don't always have to be exactly the same. You know, you don't have to make that distinction, all the time. But I definitely can tell you that it's one of those things where, a ghost is not like somebody who's crossed over. A lot of times, a ghost is somebody who's still, for whatever reason, stuck. They're stuck. There's something they need to solve, something they need someone to know, something that they, some reason that they're still lingering on the physical plane. A spirit has crossed on, but a spirit can always come back and visit. Yeah, it's the same, but also very different.
Yeah, and it almost sounds like to me when I hear that definition of a ghost, I almost feel sorry for them, because if they're stuck, I mean, they're just not capable of moving back to the other side. I mean, it almost, although, like, I've seen some pretty scary, you know, documentaries about real haunted houses, you know, that are frightening, mm-hmm. but because they always seem to be ghosts where something horrific has happened, like, for example, you know, Gettysburg, I went to Gettysburg last summer, and I just... Talk about, empathic. I was really overcome with just so much sadness just being
right.
there.
Yeah.
So that's where ghosts tend to be, correct? Wherever there's a scene of something traumatic or horrible or bloody,
yeah,
or gruesome
usually,
that took place.
Right. It usually involves a traumatic death. Somebody who dies very quickly, somebody who dies violently, somebody who dies, with some sort of still physical attachment. In some way, shape, or form. Some people, you know, die angry. They're just angry. And if they're angry, they are, you know, they may refuse to move on. Most of us, when we pass, we just move on. You know, our angels are there. They are, you know, our spirit guides are there. The people that passed on before us are there. And we are very comfortable crossing over. Other people get stuck, and they get stuck for whatever reasons. And I really do feel a lot of times when it's a very quick, violent end, people sometimes linger for a while until they figure it out. You know, they don't even sometimes know they're dead.
Wow. I mean, that's sad. I mean, that makes me feel sad for them. You know,
and have there
been cases that you know of where people, like, say, a psychic that maybe specializes in that, have been successful at helping the person move on? I mean, have there been cases of that where the ghost has been able to say, okay, you know, I'm like, have resolved whatever issues they were having and then just move on to the other side?
Yeah, that happens. It's something that, anytime you can participate in something like that, it's really a beautiful experience. I'll see it once in a while with somebody who's lingering, who has recently passed, and I'll have a client come in, and that person died very quickly. A lot of times it might be a child that died before their parent, and their parent is suffering, and they're afraid to cross over because they feel so much pain for their parent, things like that. And once they're able to give... Once they're able to give the message that they have, once they're able to let them know that they're okay, and they use someone like me or, someone who has the ability to communicate with them, once they're able to comfort that person and tell them, I live on, you just can't see me anymore, but I'm still here. My spirit is still here. My physical body died. My soul lives on. I once they're able to get that message across, a lot of times they're ready to to move on. And so it, you know, those are the things that I've participated in. You know, then there's like shows like The Ghost Whisperer, where, you know, she was, you know, it's based on John von Prague, I think his name is. James von Prague. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Messages from Heaven or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very instrumental in with that show when it was on. And you know, those were completely different situations where it was much more intense. You know, much more. It was a much more complicated situation where, you know, there was something that person needed. They needed their murder solved. They needed somebody to know something, you know, and that I'm sure goes on as well. But that's not something that I've ever experienced personally.
Right, you know, I got a chill when you mentioned, you know, the case of the child, because one of my very best friends, her twin sister's little boy passed when he was 5 from a fatal brain tumor. I mean, it came on really quickly. Within 10 months. He was gone, and this little boy really suffered, but he always smiled. I mean, he was amazing through it all. And I think that she, not the mother of the child, but my friend, her twin sister, came across, is friends with somebody who has a relative who's like you, very, very gifted in this area. And that's basically what she said, what you just told me, was that this poor little boy is like unable to move on because he just feels so much sadness from his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's the kind of situation where the mother of the child is just not like, she's just not able. And I mean, I feel a lot of sympathy for her too, because I can't even imagine what she's going through, but you know, she's not able to really bring herself to like accept that explanation, I guess, as a, if I can put it like that, you know, she's not really open to that. Whereas my friend, her twin sister, I think would be. But it just made me very sad that this little boy is kind of like, I really can't go anywhere. And she was told that he's safe, that the angels are protecting him, but that he's really not able to fully cross over because of that sadness.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that we as the people that are left behind can give those souls a gift of, you know, of letting go of them. I mean, I think we hold them back sometimes from moving on. I think that, you know, there are people who, these are souls that are very affected by, you know, the pain that of the people that they've left behind, and they're afraid to move on because they feel like they, as long as they stay close, that person is going to still feel them and be able to connect with them. And the truth of the matter is that it doesn't always, you know, if it's somebody that you love that's gone too soon, and you say, you know, it's okay, I want you to move on, I want you to live your afterlife, you know, I want you to cross over, I'm okay, I'm going to be okay. Just telling them that's such a huge gift, because, you know, they at that point they will be able to let go, and they will be able to cross over. And it's not fun being a stuck spirit. It's not fun lingering, you know, as a spirit in this world. You know, they can still, just because they cross over doesn't mean that they're never going to have any communication with you. A lot of spirits still, you know, communicate with us that have crossed over. Sometimes daily. I mean, you know, we all have the weird, okay, why is the TV turning on and off, and why is this light flickering, and, you know, why do I keep finding dimes all over the place, and why, you know, I mean, all the different things that go on. And I just think that it's something that we can give to our deceased loved ones by just saying, it's okay, you know, it's okay to let go, it's okay to move on. I think that's a gift.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny you mentioned pennies, because my mom finds pennies and dimes all the time, like in unexpected
mm-hmm.
places. And we always say
yeah.
it's my Aunt Marie, her sister, or my cousin Maris, who just passed away about a year ago unexpectedly. And yeah, it's really, I love when that happens.
Yeah, my mom uses dimes. My mom sends dimes all the time, and it's been some. I mean, and you know, it's not like, okay, you know, finding a penny laying on the floor. That's pretty. I mean, pennies are everywhere. people are starting to throw them out, actually, because they have so little value anymore. But you find pennies a lot of places. When you, or you might find a, like, you know, in the dryer. Okay, who doesn't find change in the dryer, you know, or
yeah.
in the washing machine? I mean, that just happens. But when it's in a very bizarre place, you know, like
mm-hmm.
my mom was a big Christmas person. She loved Christmas, and the first Christmas she was gone, it was the first Christmas that I had not spent with my parents, and I was like 40 years old or 41 years old. I wasn't with my parents, and I was just devastated. I'm trying to suck it up for my kids, you know, I'm trying to do whatever. So I'm on my way back from my mother-in-law's where I had had Christmas Eve, and I just lost it in the car. I couldn't keep it together anymore. I just started crying.
Aww.
And my kids are rubbing my back from, you know, the back seat, they're rubbing my back and trying to calm me down, and I'm trying to, like, get it together. So we pull into the driveway, and I forgot my phone was on my lap, and I stood up, and my phone fell, and my daughter and I bent down at the same time to pick it up, and there was a dime laying in the driveway underneath my phone. You know, and I'm like, oh, come
wow.
on, that is not a coincidence. I mean, that's my mom saying, because she had, you know, I found dimes other times since she had died. And I'm like, wow, if that's not my mom telling me that it's okay, that she, you know, she understands and that she's there, I don't know what is. But that was, you know, I've had a bunch of experiences like that, really, very,
yeah.
really deep, profound experiences.
Yeah, and that's how
it
happens
cool.
for my mother. Like, she'll find, and that's how she knows, because the dimes or the pennies, or a couple of times it was like, one time it was $2. We were sitting, I'll never forget this, we went to get coffee. I love Dunkin' Donuts. It's my favorite coffee in the world.
Oh, they have great coffee, I know.
It's the best. So we were sitting there, and then all of a sudden we got up to leave, and my mother turned to get her purse, and there was like $2 bills sitting on the window ledge. And my mom was like, those weren't there before. And I go, no, they weren't. You know, and, like, I think that's the only time it was actually dollar bills, but most of the time it's like pennies or dimes. But you're absolutely
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's, they show up very unexpectedly in weird places,
and
that's
and
how you know. It's just not.
Yeah. Or it could be someplace where you just looked and you know there was nothing there. And then you turn
right.
back and boom, it's there, you know, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. It's crazy stuff like that, but it's really, I don't know, it just kind of gives you that comfort, that warm feeling that, mm-hmm. oh, wow, they really are still here, you know, they're really still with us. And
yeah.
it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool thing. And I've had some crazy experiences, you know, with a lot of different things, but when it's your own life, when it's you personally, you know what I mean? When it's you, when it's someone who passed in your life, you just are amazed by the intensity of it, you know, the fact that, well, I'm not one that believes in coincidence anyway, but, you know, some of these things, there's just no way this could be a coincidence, you know, there's just no way. The timing is too bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And it's I think it's fun when that happens. I like that, actually. Those experiences.
Yeah, I do too. Well, I do too. I mean, they're really beautiful experiences. I mean, I don't know. It's really very cool. It's very cool. It's a you know, there are so many things, and I know we're running out of time, but there are so many things that, you know, that I could talk about just with experiences that I've had. You know, either with angels or with you know, my grandparents when they passed, or my mom when she passed, or, you know, even animals, even pets, you know, that I've had, you know, come to me and things like that. And, you know, they're amazing stories. So lots to come in the future.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, it's very fortunate that you have this show now. And I'm looking forward. I'll be tuning in on Sundays to hear all these stories, Lisa. So actually, that's a kind of a good segue into just letting everybody know that you will be here on the Right Stream Radio Network every Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, and
yep.
you'll be dealing with some different topics. Do you want to let people know kind of what are some of the topics you might be delving into over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I want to get into, there's a lot of different things I want to get into, and I want to get some guests on, so anybody who has any experience with any of the stuff I'm talking about, anybody who has, you know, any kind of psychic gifts, practices holistic medicine, any kind of healer and would like to be part of the show, send me an email at Lisa. It's my email address is Lisa@lisatarvis.com. And or visit my website at lisatarvis.com and let me know. I'm going to be looking for some guests to talk about lots of different topics. So I want to get into healing modalities. I want to get into a lot more spiritual things. I want to get into, you know, even some and some fascinating metaphysical topics. You know, such as crystals and a lot more on angels and spirit guides and angel numbers, which is really cool. The repeating numbers that we're all seeing lately, you know, 1111 and 111 and 222 and what they all mean. So there's going to be lots of great stuff coming up. So definitely tune in, and I'm going to be doing lots of advertising and lots of getting people interest. We kind of just threw this together, you know. My part of it has just kind of come into play in the last week or so. So I don't have a lot of details yet on what's coming up when, but I hopefully by next Sunday I'll have more detail about, you know, who's going to be on when and what we're going to be talking about what days.
That's exciting. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And just to let everybody know, you know, with the Right Stream, that was my goal, was to have a different host for each day of the week in a different area. And I thought of Lisa right away just based on my own reading with her and hearing you, Lisa, on other, you know, interview on other shows. I knew you would be great, and I'm just really excited to have you. And then, of course, on Mondays, we're going to have Military Monday with John Gresham, who is a military historian and author, and he does a lot of excellent work. He's also a journalist. I'm a game developer, too, believe it or not. He develops a lot of games, like video games, like with military themes, and he's sort of a man of many talents, and he knows a lot of people in a lot of different areas as well. I think tomorrow he's interviewing the naval editor for Aviation Magazine. So that'll be really, and his show will air at 1 p.m. on Mondays. And then I'm doing Tuesdays with Daria Ann, and I'm basically just going to, you know, and actually, Lisa, this is funny because I think this might be the first you're hearing this, but I've decided to expand my show to 2 hours to accommodate two different guests. So I'm hoping to be able to interview two authors per show, and taking a little break in between, and, of course, allowing for questions and, you know, and authors in a variety of genres to make it as interesting and to cover as much ground as possible. So this coming Tuesday, actually, I'm interviewing Bill Chandler, who founded Andante Publishing, and he's also an inventor, and he's very well-versed with patents and that whole process. So that should be an interesting show. We're gonna talk about that Tuesday at 1 p.m. So I'm really excited about
that. Sounds exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Lots of good stuff coming up.
Yeah. And I still have slots available, too, for other hosts. So if anybody's listening and you might be interested, I would prefer if you were an author as well, just to kind of, you know, cause since we are talking about writing as well and talking about books and different things. But certainly I'm very open as far as topics are concerned. So you can find me on Twitter at Daria Ann, DariaAnne. Or at my website, which is DariaDiGiovanni.com. So, stay tuned because we've got lots more coming up.
Very exciting. Can't wait till next week, and I can't wait till Monday and Tuesday then. We've got, you know, two other great shows coming up here tomorrow and Tuesday. So everybody try and tune in, and we're gonna really get this together, figure out how much, you know, you're going to 2 hours. We spent 2 hours almost today, but I'm hoping to, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do 2 hours every week. I may do, you know, a 60, 90-minute show depending on what's going on. So we'll figure that out as we go, you know, along. And it is new, and we're just, you know, we're just kind of, at least on my side, we're just kind of figuring it all out now and getting it all lined up what's going to work. So, you know, anybody who has any kind of ideas for shows, any kind of ideas for the length of a show, anybody that, you know, has, you know, any kind of feedback at all, are welcome to send me an email or contact me on Twitter or Facebook. Everything's under Lisa Tarvis, LASATARVES. So my Twitter account and Facebook. So looking forward to hearing ideas.
Yep, and I forgot to mention as well, we do our Twitter chat every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern. Just use the hashtag WriteStream, And this week I have author Mariam Kobrus, who's somebody I met on Twitter who actually lives in Germany. And I just have I just posted a review this morning on my blog of the first book in her trilogy. It's called The Stone Trilogy. And phenomenal. And I know we're going to get a lot of good advice from her in terms of, you know, the writing and publishing process, because she's been very successful at it. So I just want to let people know that every Thursday we have a Twitter chat called WriteStream at 11 a.m. Eastern. So I hope people will join us for that, especially, you know, if you are an aspiring author and you're trying to kind of navigate through the world of writing and publishing in this age of new media. I really intended it to be sort of an informative, fun chat, but also very informative to kind of help people and to network with other writers as well.
Yes,
so,
actually, I joined last week, I think, for the first time, and it was really exciting. It was a lot of fun, and you found, you know, you got some great information as an author, you know, as somebody who is considering, you know, writing a book. There was some great information, so that's definitely a great thing to look for on Twitter. Is the weekly chat.
Yep, and what I'm trying to do outside of the chat, Lisa, too, is like just to, you know, if I come across something online that might be helpful, like from CopyBlogger or from other writers who have blogs and whatever, I'll just post something using that hashtag. So it's just a great way. I'm really, like I said, I really want to build that up so that it's helpful to everybody. And I'm really glad that you enjoyed the chat you were part of, because that's really my goal. Like I said, I just want people to get the information they need to be successful. You know, so.
Well, and as an author, being able to ask other authors questions, you know, being able to get other people's opinions and people that are more experienced. I mean, I've written one book. Other people have written a lot more than one book. You know, self-publishing, you know, being what it is now, being so big. I mean, there are just so many topics that you can get into you know, just in that one chat that I was in, we covered so many different areas. So I think it's a great thing for people that, you know, whether you just love to read or whether you're considering writing a book or whether you're already a published author, it's a great chat.
Yeah. Yeah. You meet a lot of great people. So
yeah, absolutely.
Very excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, me too. So everybody, tune in for all these things coming up. I'm gonna put a link to this on my website and send this out on Twitter and everything. So anybody who wants to listen to this that you know, either didn't get to listen to the whole thing or just wants to didn't get to listen to it at all, it'll be on my website. So hopefully you can listen to it. Listen to it from there, and look forward to this every week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Lots of good stuff coming up.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Lisa, thank you for letting me be a part of your first, debut show. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for answering all my questions.
I don't know what I would have done without you. I don't know what I would have done without you. How would have I gotten through it? It's one thing being a guest. It's a whole different thing when you're doing it from the other side as the host. So you made it much easier for me to have my first experience with this. And next time I'm gonna be on. I'm gonna be prepared.
All right.
I'm gonna have ideas. I'm gonna have stuff going on.
Well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be tuning in for sure.
All right, cool. All right, so I will talk to you all next week. And, Daria, you have a great rest of your week, and I'm sure we'll be in touch several times throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks for helping me. All right. Bye-bye. All right, everyone. We are out, and I will be back on next week at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Thank you. Thanks for listening.